G'day you mob, welcome to this episode of Aussie English. Today I have a great episode with Emma Walker from Pronunciation with Emma. So I sat down and had a bit of a chat to her over Skype recently about what it was like going through university and studying linguistics. And Emma is a pronunciation coach, so you'll be able to check out all the links related to her sites and everything at the end. You'll find her on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, Pronunciation with Emma. But I think you're really going to like this chat, guys. We talk all about pronunciation, about learning foreign languages like Portuguese and Spanish, and our personal experiences, especially with regards to learning the pronunciation of these languages. She's got an interesting accent because she comes from a certain area in Britain, so it'll be interesting to see if you guys notice where that accent is from. And it's also obviously good practice for your ears to get used to different accents. And we also have a bit of a chat about different slang, especially slang in Britain, and a term she used that I had never heard in my life. So that was interesting. Anyway, guys, let's get into it. Emma Walker from Pronunciation with Emma. G'day guys, welcome to this episode of Aussie English. Today I have Emma Walker, and I don't know what to... I know you're on Instagram as Pronunciation with Emma, but is that your specific business name, or how does it work exactly? Because I know you've got a different website, right, that's Emma Walker instead of Pronunciation with Emma. So can you just tell me about your whole business? How does it work, and how did you get started?
No. So my website is also Pronunciation with Emma, so I don't know if there's another teacher Emma
Maybe
Walker
I was getting
around.
Confused. Yeah, sorry, my bad. All right, so it's only Pronunciation with Emma, gotcha.
Yeah, someone's trying to copy me.
Yeah.
I focus more on pronunciation, but it hasn't always been that way. I studied English language and linguistics at university, and I absolutely loved my pronunciation and, phonetics and phonology modules. I was really interested in those.
And what did they cover exactly for those who aren't linguistically inclined? What were those sorts of modules covering in the English language and pronunciation?
Yeah, I still remember like the first kind of introductory modules, they were based on just learning the IPA. So I still remember this PhD student who used to do the seminars with us, and she used to sit at the front of the class just basically trying to replicate some of the sounds, and we would copy her, and we would be sitting there with little mirrors trying to mimic exactly what she was saying, and it was just so funny.
Did you have to learn all of the different sounds in the IPA, like everything the human vocal tract is capable of?
Or? Everything. Jesus. Everything. The first one was just knowing the British phonemic chart, which was easy. At that time, I had a very strong Yorkshire accent because I'm originally from York, which is in Yorkshire, which is in the north of England.
I was going to ask you, I was like, it's not Scottish. I know that it's not Scottish, but I'm like, I can't tell.
No, it's, it's quite a few hours from Scotland still. Still a few miles in between Yorkshire and Scotland. But
so if we were to break this down, in Game of Thrones, if your accent was placed on the map, where would you be in Game of Thrones? Because I know that the accent gets stronger the further north you get, right?
Yeah, it would be the north. Yeah. And it's interesting because the northern characters actually have northern accents.
Yeah, exactly. So you'd be a wildling.
I would, yeah. Oh, what's her name? Ygritte?
Yeah, with Jon Snow. Gotcha.
That's it. Yeah, like that kind of accent. That's my original accent. But it's funny because that's not the actress's original accent.
Oh, she had to learn it.
Yeah, the same with Jon Snow or Jon Snow.
Yeah, Jon Snow. You know nothing.
You know nothing, Jon Snow. It's just so funny. But I had to change my accent a little bit because no one was understanding me.
Really?
Yeah.
Where like, was the university? Was that further south or?
No, so I studied in York as well. I studied at one of the universities in York, and it wasn't until I went to Spain mm-hmm. when I started noticing that people were not understanding me because of my accent.
Yeah.
So I worked as a language assistant, and I basically only took the modules as a language assistant because I didn't want to do an exam. Mm-hmm. That was the only reason. So it was literally like, okay, Emma, this is the list of classes. Choose what you want. And I thought, oh my God, I don't want to do any exams. Like, what can I do? So I saw that I could take a module in being a language assistant in a mm-hmm. secondary school. And I thought, okay, easy. No.
What did you have to do? What did it cover, like, when you were doing that class?
So I was teaching teenagers, and which is really hard when you first start, because I think
even in your own language, right?
yeah, it was so hard. But luckily, the kids—they were so nice, so like strangely nice.
Strangely nice. You
know, yeah. I was like, what are you planning? so they were so friendly and so curious, like. I still remember on like my first few days working there, they would come up to me like touching me like, oh, your skin, Emma, it's so white. Oh, your eyes are so blue. Oh, your hair. Oh my goodness. For people who can't see me, I have blonde hair, blue eyes, and super white, pale skin.
She's touched by fire, right?
And so they were like, oh my goodness, your legs, they're so white, because it was just the first few weeks that I had been in Spain. So, of course, my English body had never seen the sun. And, they were so shocked. And I remember in a lesson I mentioned the word pub. And I said, yeah. Okay, so you know, it's quite typical for people to go to a pub in the evenings. And they were like, teacher, what is like what
yeah
Bob, what is Bob,
what is the typical thing that you have to do too when teaching English overseas, because you don't want to end up teaching them a really specific accent, right, where they're going to learn Yorkshire pronunciation and then go anywhere in the world and people are going to be like, what?
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I didn't want. I didn't want a generation of learners to go around saying pub, we off to pub. And, you know, honestly, I did it for them.
So how quickly did you have to do that? How quickly did you have to adapt and change your accent? And was it an easy process or...?
Yeah, so it took me maybe a few weeks, and luckily I was living with a girl who had a very, very posh accent at the time, so I was able just to mimic her. And mm-hmm. this is the technique that I teach to my students, is to mimic. And for those who don't know what mimicking is, it's basically when you're copying someone.
Exactly.
So yeah, I would just listen to my flatmate. I would, of course, like listen to BBC Radio. And I started to realize not only were the sounds different, but the intonation was different.
So I think that's the quickest way to clue in, to get used to the intonation too. It's kind of like you have to fake it until you make it. You've got to keep pretending, acting out, pretending like you're in a movie or something and saying these lines with the same intonation, even if it sounds strange. Because that's what happened with me in Portuguese when I first started learning it. I remember hearing them saying, like, I'd be like trying to say the word as well or to, também. And I would always, they would always be like, também, with this like inflection going up. And I'd be like, that sounds so freaking weird. Like, and I just had to spend ages practicing that kind of intonation so that when I speak, I say it more naturally like that, which sounds strange to me when I was learning, but to them sounds more natural.
Exactly. So how did you improve your Portuguese pronunciation and intonation.
It's just listen, repeat, as you say. I was initially using Duolingo, and every line that they would say with a real native, you know, using strange sentences, the bear kissed the tree or something, I would just copy as much as possible, especially when starting a language, it would just be pronunciation all the time. And even now with my fiance's Portuguese, or Brazilian, speaks Portuguese, and I'm always like, just correct me if I pronounce something wrong. And it's pretty amazing how quickly you get the hang of it, though, especially with Portuguese, where you have different emphases on different parts of the words. So like you would don't say, like in Spanish, I guess it would be like diccionario. You would say diccionario. You have to do this da-da-da.
Yeah, and then exactly.
That's, eventually you get that's used really to it, hard. Though, and it feels natural, and it's sort of like dit-da-dit-da-dit.
Yeah, you know what I'm finding now, though? Now, because I've been learning Portuguese for just over a week. It's now day 8 that I'm on my Portuguese adventure. And now when I speak Spanish, I'm starting to use that kind of intonation that they use in Portuguese. So, yeah, my poor boyfriend, who's Spanish, of course, is Spanish.
Gotcha.
And he's like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. Like, why are you speaking this way?
That must be the hardest thing, because I remember trying to learn Spanish after I'd started Portuguese and was just like, this is so... One, the words and the grammar and everything is so similar that I was sort of confusing myself. But then you've got Spanish that's very... Like, it's kind of consistent with the sounds. You don't really change the emphasis a lot in sentences, right? Yeah. And yet in Portuguese, it's the complete opposite, where you'll be like, and it's just, it was weird. Yeah. And at first I was like, I always loved Spanish and wanted to learn it, and thought when I first heard Portuguese, I was like, this language sounds so freaking weird with this like, but now you go, I listen to Spanish and I'm like, there's no like emotion to it. It's just.
I know. It's funny because someone said to me the other day, like, why are you learning Portuguese? It's such a dull sounding language. I'm like, have you heard Portuguese?
Yeah,
what language have you listened to? Jeez. It's the least dull language I've ever heard.
So what made you decide to learn Portuguese after learning Spanish? Tell us about that story, because I only noticed that a few minutes before we got on the call, and then I was like, oh, wow, okay. Yeah. And you were like 5 days in, I think, on your Instagram. So what made you start that, and how are you learning, and what have you experienced so far?
Well, I already speak Spanish, so to learn Portuguese, it's kind of like, why not? Mm. You know, it's like a shortcut almost. I feel like I'm teasing. So
I just modify my accent. Fluent.
That's it. I basically feel fluent in Portuguese, but the problem is that I keep mixing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling a friend this as well, and she's Brazilian, she's an English teacher, and I said, like, I just confuse little words like but, however.
Yeah, that's right, because you've got what, you know, mas in Portuguese for but then it's like pero in Spanish, pero. Right? They're completely different. Yeah. You'd be like, what?
Exactly. So as I'm writing to friends or whatever in Portuguese, you know, I mix, and surprisingly, they still understand me. I'm kind of learning it just because it's so close to Spanish. And on top of that, I have quite a lot of Brazilian followers on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, it'd be so cool if I could understand some of these guys and understand their comments and stuff,
because they're pretty rabid with regards to being fans of people too. So I think you tend to receive a much bigger warm welcome if you're someone learning Portuguese than if you were learning Spanish, where I think they're so used to it, they're just like, man, another gringo learning Spanish, whatever. Whereas the Portuguese, to me, no offense to anyone who speaks Portuguese, but it's almost like they're the little brother of Spain or Spanish. And they're kind of ignored by most of the world as a language. And so when you learn it, they're always like, yes, you know, finally, yes.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And it's so surprising, because a lot of people who don't really know me, they just see, oh, you're learning Portuguese. They actually messaged me, quite a few people messaged me like, why are you learning Portuguese? Why don't you learn Spanish? And it's like, complete it, mate. Like,
speak it, mate. And the Portuguese people who will message you will be like,
I'm happy to teach you. Do you need time? Like, we can do Skype calls. I'll help you. I'm happy to, like, what can I do to make your life easy?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And the funny thing is, incredible. I always find people don't realize how many people speak Portuguese. You'll be like, so do you know how many people there are that speak it? You know, there's more speakers of Portuguese in South America than there are Spanish speakers, right? And there's about 300 million of them worldwide. Like,
it's crazy. I had a look at just the population of Brazil, and it was something like 200 million.
More.
Or 207 million. It was a funny number,
it's,
you know,
ridiculous.
But let's round it off to 200 million. And I thought, wow, that's a lot of people.
So what are you doing to currently learn it? How did you go about beginning a new language from scratch, or from near scratch, considering you know Spanish?
yeah, I cheated. Sorry, guys. But
years learning Spanish was cheating, was it?
Yeah. But with Spanish, I picked up Spanish very, very quickly. Very quickly. And I think it's because with Spanish, I was immersed. So, you know, I took a course in Spanish. So, yeah, I went about learning Spanish very differently to how I am learning Portuguese. Mm-hmm. So with Spanish, I took a course and then I went to Spain. I immersed myself and I had to speak to eat. I had to speak to survive.
How long were you there for during that immersive period as well?
1 year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And awesome. And I went from like zero. I went from...
To hero.
Me llamo Emma. To,
That's my level currently, guys.
Fluent. And I went from that kind of level to about B1 in a year, just from immersing myself. I did go to classes, but I didn't take them very seriously. And at the same time, I was also doing Catalan classes.
Oh, wow. You animal, man. You're just tackling all the languages, all the romance languages.
I know, it's so funny because people, when they saw my Portuguese video, they're like, why don't you learn Russian? Why don't you learn Farsi? What about Arabic? I'm like, whoa, calm down, guys. Like,
I've had that a lot of times as well. Like, sorry to sort of change the subject a little bit, but I had that when I was at, I was studying and there was a secretary there when I was telling them I was learning, I think it was Portuguese, and she was like, she was Indian, and she's like, you should learn Hindi. And I was like, well, but I don't know anyone who speaks Hindi. Do you speak Hindi? And she's like, no, I just speak English. That, you know, she was like, Hindi's got more people. And I'm like, but Chinese has got more people. Like, you could always play that argument about different languages having different benefits. You just have to pick one that you're interested in and have a passion for, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So that's the key, is to find the reason why you're learning that language and to have that motivation. And once you find that motivation, you cannot be stopped. Like, I am studying Portuguese now. Ah, so I never moved on to how I'm learning Portuguese.
Yeah, sorry. Continue.
I got sidetracked as well. So, yeah, I haven't taken a single class in Portuguese.
It's only been a week. There's still time.
I know. But I'm doing it for a very good reason, because I want to kind of challenge myself. But nowadays, not much of a challenge, because there are so many free resources online that it's not even that much of a challenge. But I wanted to challenge myself to learn as much Portuguese as possible without paying loads of money. Because, of course, a lot of people that follow me and follow you, they're not rich. They're not from rich countries. They maybe don't have access to a teacher. They don't have the resources in their classrooms or whatever. You know, they don't have that access. So
that's a really good experiment, though, to show what can be done without any assistance, or at least, you know, monetary assistance, where you've had to pay for lessons, because you could effectively, if you wanted to, pay someone to teach you or go to class every single day, and that would, you know, give the results most people would expect, but it would be good to see what you can do without that.
Exactly. The only thing that's happened is that it was my birthday recently, and so my boyfriend and my best friend got me some books. Mm-hmm. So I haven't paid for those books. I asked for them for my birthday, but I started with those books, and they're fantastic. They're really, really good.
Which books
and I'm
did
learning-
you get, if I can ask for selfish reasons?
Well, actually, company, can we call them a company? They do English books as well, so if people are interested, they'll have to let me know how the English version is. But I'm using this one.
I saw that today. Awesome.
Yeah, I'm using this one, the complete series of Teach Yourself Brazilian Portuguese.
Oh my God, and you're learning Brazilian Portuguese. The European Portuguese speakers are going to be pissed.
I know. Sorry, guys. But I am... Oh, I keep hitting that spoon. Why is there a spoon there? just like random stuff around my computer. But I am... this is the thing as well I wanted to show my followers is you can't just stick to one variety. I'm listening to European Portuguese radio. I'm listening to materials in European Portuguese and I'm getting familiar with that accent. And I realized that Brazilian Portuguese and European Portuguese are very, very different in terms of pronunciation. You know, I find that European Portuguese is very shh.
Yes, it sounds more like Russian to me when I hear it. I'm like, whoa, there's a lot of shh, shh, shh. It's very different that I'm not used to because I'm surrounded by Portuguese speakers.
From Brazil, sorry. Yeah. I find that Brazilian Portuguese, it reminds me a lot of South American Spanish.
Mm.
So I just feel like I have to change my Spanish accent to sound a bit more South American and then just add a few more kind of zh sounds, you know, and I basically got the pronunciation. But yeah, that's it.
Wow.
And this other book that I've never heard of before, but my friend got me that one.
What is it, the Everything...
Everything Learning Brazilian Portuguese book. And I thought, everything? Well, that's got me covered.
that should cover most things.
Yeah, everything. And it says, and I love this, it says, speak, write, and understand Portuguese in no time.
So you don't even have to open it.
No time. I'm fluent already. But yeah, it's a really good book for vocabulary.
Brilliant.
Very, very good book. Vocab, so and the other book's good for grammar.
What's the time sort of that you're setting yourself? How long do you want to, like, you could obviously let it go forever, but you want to do it within 6 months, a year, 2 days? Like, what's the limit you've set yourself?
A month.
Holy moly. So, okay.
In a month, I want to be able to have a basic conversation in Portuguese. So yes, I've found some victims to take part in this little study. We'll see how that goes. Just speaking after a month, because I just want to show to people. I don't know if you're the same, but I get so many people messaging me and saying, "Emma, how do I learn English as fast as possible? And what's the easiest way?" And it's like,
wrong.
There's no easy way. Hey, yeah. There's no fast way.
That's one of those things that it would be good to talk about for a bit, because it's kind of like losing weight. It's kind of like you've come in with the wrong attitude if you see it as a how do I do this overnight thing. Personally, I think it's more you need to reassess how you're viewing this activity, and it's almost like it's a lifestyle activity. You have to change the way that your life fits around this language now and think, okay, this is not a week. This is not a month. It's not even a year task. It's something that's ongoing, potentially forever, that you just chip away at slowly. And that's kind of daunting. But at the same time, I feel like that's really sort of it releases you a bit of stress because you know you've got so much time, you know, and you just keep trying to get one step ahead every single day. And it's kind of like, okay, I don't have to make massive strides. I don't need to lose 10 kilos this week. As long as I lose a little bit, I'm sort of on the right path, right? Do you have any advice with regards to English learners who ask you those questions? What do you normally say to them?
So I normally say to them, set a goal. So this is what I've been doing. So my first week, my goal was to be able to introduce myself in Portuguese and say something about why I'm learning Portuguese. That was my goal.
Yeah.
And I did it. And I put that video on the internet for everyone to see. I got some amazing feedback and that encouraged me more. Of course, you get like one or two negative messages and you're like, whatever, man, I've got like 400 positive ones.
Exactly.
So I don't care. So I was kind of showing people, look, if you're not confident, it doesn't matter. I've done this. I've put my video and my face out on the internet. speaking Portuguese after a week. If I can do this, then you can do it as well. You know, I don't mean putting your video on the internet, but I mean just speaking.
I think that emphasis too on not worrying so much about making mistakes, making a fool of yourself. If you can let go of that, it makes such a big difference. And I noticed that recently. I told my fiance no English until the end of the year, just only Portuguese from now on. And we've moved into a house where there are three other guys who are from Brazil. And I've like, they talk to me a little bit in English, but I try and always turn it back. But I noticed that initially she would say things and my eyes would kind of give her that, you know, that vague look where she's like, you don't know what I'm saying. And I'll be like, yeah, I do. And then she's like, what did I say? And I'll be like, you got me. But yeah, it only took a day or two. And then I started feeling, okay, like I don't mind making mistakes anymore. I'm comfortable saying, what did you say? Can you repeat that? And it was surprising how quickly once I let go, conquering those issues was no longer a big problem. And now I don't feel embarrassed at all now when I don't understand. And because it's almost like it's so common now for me to say, what does that mean? What was this word? Yeah. How do I say this? What is this? That it's just not even an issue. So I think for people listening, if you're having fears about that, just do it more. It's literally like diving in the deep end of the pool. You do it once and you're kind of like, okay, it's not that bad.
Yeah, no, exactly. And the kind of mistakes I made in Spanish, you know, I just have no shame anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like I experienced all the horrors in Spanish and all the kind of mistakes that I could have made in a second language. Like I made some really, really bad mistakes where I got myself in trouble, or I said some very rude things, very sexual things numerous times, and I didn't mean to.
Is that when you say things like excitado? I made that mistake so many times. Trying to say I'm excited, and they're like, no, that's not what it means. It's got a sexual connotation. You're like, ah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I still remember when I was in Tenerife, and I said to, I was living with a family, and I said to the dad of the family, estoy caliente. I was saying, oh, God, I'm so hot, like as in the temperature. Yeah, it's very hot in this country and my temperature is rising. So I want to say, estoy caliente. And his eyes were like, what? And I realized, oh, my God, no, I said it wrong. Tengo calor. And I had to quickly change, save myself, like, no, I'm not horny. Not in this temperature, my friend. So yeah, it was embarrassing, but I've said much worse. And
So I wanted to ask you, what, when you were learning immersively, what as an English teacher, what sort of experience did you have, and do you have any advice for people who are in that same position now and how to get the most out of it?
So the thing is, I don't know how it is for people going to Australia, but I find that when people come to England, the same thing always happens. And they say, oh, English people don't want to talk to me. English people don't want to be my friend. They're so closed. They just want to be friends with each other. They don't want to talk to me. And I think that's kind of true to a certain extent, because it's kind of like, well, why should they be your friend just because you're foreign?
I go outside. Most Australians aren't my friends. They don't want to talk to me. Yeah. They'll ignore me. I'll walk up to them and be like, hey, do you want to chat? And they'll tell me to F off.
You know?
Exactly.
And, you know, it's exactly the same for me. I have very few English friends because I just haven't found the right people who I have things in common with. Mm. And I find as well, I'm 26 now, and I find that most 26-year-olds are not making YouTube videos. They have their own companies. They are running their own business and teaching. They've traveled. They speak X number of languages. So I find it quite hard to find people my own age who have similar experiences to me. So that's quite tricky.
What advice would you give them if they say to you, how do I best engage with or become a part of the community in England? Or, you know, I'm sure that the same advice would apply here in Australia. What advice would you normally give them?
I encourage my students, like, I have to really force them to go out to, like, meetings, to join clubs, like, join your local sports club. Even if you don't play sports, just go. Play tennis and see who's around, or join a football club or something. Or if you enjoy painting, go to a painting class, start talking to people. And I think people put too much pressure on other people to start talking to them. Mm. But they also need to think that they need to start communicating with other people as well. They need to initiate that conversation because, you know, when I was in Spain, I found people quite accommodating and they would be asking me like, are you okay here? If you need anything, I'll help you. And, you know, they were so understanding because they traveled.
Yeah.
But here we, yeah, many people maybe haven't traveled or they just haven't learned another language. We don't understand. It's not everyone, but yeah, I wouldn't expect to make friends on day one just because you're from another country.
It's hard work, yeah. Right? You've got to go out. I've been in Canberra now for ages, like 6 months, ages for me. Okay. I've just moved to this city and I've just been inside the whole time. We've made, like Kel and I have made like 2 friends. I mean, and that goes to show we haven't been working our asses off to try and meet people or anything like that. But we've, you know, so it goes to show that even native speakers, or for me at least, in this country find it difficult if you don't put in that effort. So you have to find, yeah, some kind of social thing that you can go to and just be the person that goes up to people and introduces yourself and starts those conversations. And eventually, it's almost like dating, right? You just have to keep doing it until you find someone you get along with. And then you're kind of like, okay, I found my person and I can ignore the other ones that I didn't get along with, right? Because you can't befriend everyone.
No, exactly. And I think that's what people make the mistake of doing. They try and make friends with everyone and then they realize that they're not spending enough time. Like one thing I found with a lot of my Spanish and Italian friends is that they would say to me, oh, I don't have time this week. Oh, sorry, I'm working so much. But then I would see them on Facebook with other friends. And it's like, oh, so you have time to go out with your Italian friends or your Spanish friends, but not time to go out with me. And, you know, I just, you have to keep, I don't know. You have, it's like a relationship, as you said, you know, you have to keep in touch with those people and find people that you're interested in. You have the same interest. And that's why clubs are a really good idea. When I was living in Spain, I joined a language exchange and I met some people there. And then we found out that we had common interests. Mm-hmm. We liked, I don't know, just going out, doing stuff, you know, so we would go out hiking or go out into the mountains or whatever, you know. I'd never been in the mountains in my life. So.
Exactly. One of the good things too is just after, if you do go to some kind of event, like, you know, or some club where you're doing a sport or something, ask people out afterwards. That's when you get to sort of chat and just take it easy and find out, you know, who are the people that are worth hanging out with, and they'll put their hand up for it, right? If they're up for going and getting dinner after a match or whatever it is that you've gone to at the club, then you'll be like, okay, this person's keen to socialize as well. I wanted to ask you though, accents in the UK, like, are insanely diverse compared to places like Australia. What advice do you give students who come to England, whether it is about which accent to learn and how to learn it, or how to just get the listening comprehension down for all the different accents in England? Because this can obviously apply to learning any accent or at least becoming accustomed to it. What do you suggest they do?
Yeah, so I suggest listening to like local radio stations for one. You know, you could literally just go on Google and type Yorkshire radio stations and just choose one.
Thanks for the internet. Yeah.
Yeah. what's really good as well is we also have regional news. So, you know, you can just look for like BBC Yorkshire or BBC Northumbria, whatever. So we have different ones there. And I just suggest people listen to that. The BBC also has a really good website where they give like a glossary of all the dialect terms.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yes, I do not recommend that people do that unless they are moving to that area. So, you know, if you're moving to, for example, Bristol, it may be good to learn some of the dialect in Bristol just so you know what people are saying to you.
So do you mean it's like slang or something? It's not just standard English with a different accent. It's specific terms to that area and not anywhere else.
Exactly. Yeah, gotcha. Like Bristol, I heard for the first time in my life, I heard Gertlush. And I was like,
I have no idea what that is.
Exactly. What is Gertlush? Ah, that's well Gertlush. I was like, I don't know what you're saying.
What does it mean?
I just asked. Yeah. It means, like, it's really nice. It's really good. Like, oh, this cider is Gertlush. Because they use that herb here, so yeah. I'm trying to mimic and pick that up. But, yeah, they would say stuff like that. And actually, there is a pub close, you know, in the center that's called Gertlush. So now I know what it means.
Oh, yeah, that sort of stuff's crazy. And I guess it is important to sort of focus on that more when you get settled in a place than try and learn everything, because if you do that, 90% of it probably won't be useful. You know, if you learn Australian slang and move to Bristol or you go to somewhere in the US, it's going to be effectively useless. So focus on slang as a secondary thing. But what about learning English, standard British English? Which accent do you get them to focus on? And do you still encourage them to try and listen to other accents?
Mm. So the one that I teach is almost like a mixture between Yorkshire and standard. Mm-hmm. but I tend to teach students what we call RP, yeah, which stands for Received Pronunciation. And that's the one that you will find in the dictionary. That's the one that you will find the news presenters use who are based in London, not the regional news stations, etc. But I still keep some of my northern sounds, you could say. So, for example, I don't say path, glass, grass. I say path, glass, grass, mm-hmm. Which I find is just easier for students to do. You
that's
know?
Actually and funny. That's a point that's different between you and I, because I would say path, grass, and glass instead of path. Path, yeah, that would sound more American or as you say, yeah, British path. To me, yeah. And we have that, but though we have that, sometimes there are certain things, I think, like bath and bath and castle and castle. Some people will say either one of those in Australia, so sometimes there are those words, which is strange.
Yeah, so when you teach, though, do you find that students are mimicking you and they do say, like, glass?
It depends on the student, because quite often they're not specifically after an Australian accent. They might just want to understand it and learn just basic English with me, like grammar and that sort of stuff, which applies everywhere. And yeah, so some of them it's difficult because they've got multiple teachers as well. They'll be learning from an American and a Canadian, and I'll be like, I just don't want to correct your pronunciation, because you'll go to the next class and then be told something different.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would just tell them how I say it. That's pretty much my caveat every time. I'm like, I'm just going to tell you how I pronounce things, because there's always going to be someone saying, that's not how you say it, this is how you say it. And you'll just be like, right, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, so, I know. Yeah, I've had the same.
What tips would you have, finishing up, what tips would you have for students, whether they're learning Australian English, British English, American English, to improve their pronunciation? What advice would you give them?
Yeah, so I would start off with learning individual sounds first and trying to perfect those little sounds, get those right. Mm-hmm. You know, you can do that by, you don't even have to like study the IPA like hardcore. You just have to be familiar with the sounds and the symbols. You know, just get familiar with those and learn to really kind of tune into sound, stop listening for words and grammar and understanding, and start listening for sound and start to mimic. And a really good trick to also kind of test your pronunciation is to record yourself. So find a very short, like this podcast, for example, people could take a very short section, literally like 3 seconds. Listen to that, repeat, record, compare your recording to the original and see how your pronunciation is. Do they sound the same, or are you having problems with a certain sound? For example, a lot of students have problems with the as in that, and they say like that,
yeah,
or that, you know. So if you find those kind of things are affecting people understanding you, then do something about it, practice it, watch. There are videos online, like I'm learning Portuguese for free. It's so much stuff, and I know people can do it for English too.
And are you aware of the sounds you find difficult? Because that's what I tend to say to people. I'm like, you probably know which sounds you're finding the most difficult and that you need to focus on. You know, I don't think it'll be a complete shock when some people realize, oh man, I can't say the TH, so I'll just avoid it. And it's like, no, you need to sit down in your own time and just keep practicing it. You know, you don't have to do it in front of other people, but just don't avoid the things you're finding difficult. But which sounds have you found hard in Portuguese so far? The nasal vowels?
You know what's the hardest? It's actually the sound, which we have in English.
Yeah.
But I just cannot, like, you know, the word England, I cannot say that because it has the double R, which is a H.
Yeah.
And then you have the R at the end, which is also a H.
But is that like Spanish that's screwing you up? Because you would say that and think Inglaterra, wouldn't you?
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
I think it might be that. So I would naturally read it as Inglaterra.
Yeah.
With an English way, it would be Inglaterra.
Yeah.
So to read double R as I can't seem to close my vocal cords in time. To do it, I have to say
that'll come with time, though. And you'll be able to do it at the start of words. It's just that you're not used to, especially in English. I think we do the H deletion if it's in between words, right, or any time. So we will just remove that H. So you almost have to turn that back on and say Inglaterra and get used to it. It's like, what? But I love that sort of stuff. And it's, for me, I focus in on that. Like when I first started Portuguese, I was finding the nasal vowels freaking hard. The ow, ing, ong. And that I had to sit, that took months for me to perfect, especially when reading or wanting to speak quickly. I would have to think and be like, okay, there's an N after this vowel. So that means that it's an ong sound instead of an R sound. And it was just like, but I think eventually it comes, right? And it's like, you just need to keep, for me, at least with those languages, I just focus on just doing it passively. I'm not like going to try and remember the sounds when I'm talking. It's more I just sit down, practice, say it, and I hope the muscle memory in my mouth will eventually get there.
Exactly. A really good trick as well, and I don't recommend this for everyone because it does involve alcohol, is to have like, next time when you're out with your friends, you know, and you drink alcohol, I'm not saying that you should get super drunk, okay? Do not go around saying, oh, but pronunciation with Emma said I can get drunk.
That's it. You practice when you're wasted.
Yeah, it's the best time. No, but if you drink just a little bit of alcohol, what happens is your muscles become more relaxed and you yourself become more relaxed and you don't care so much about making mistakes and what other people think.
Yeah.
And if you can just have a little bit of alcohol, okay, a very little bit, just to kind of relax your muscles, it really helped. And this is how I learned the "h" in Spanish, because I kept saying like a "ham on," you know, with a "h," an English one. And it wasn't until I started, you know, like having beers with friends. And as I was drinking the beers, I realized, oh, I can do the "h" now.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so much easier because I became less, not paranoid, like conscious.
Exactly. You just don't care as much, right? And that happened. I had a funny story that I wanted to mention. You made me remember that one of my students, Carlos, was telling me he took the IELTS exam 5 times, failed it 4 times. And the final time his teacher said, have a glass of wine before the speaking test, because that was the thing he was failing. And so he just sculled like a glass of red wine right before the test and smashed it because it was all in his head and he wasn't relaxing.
Yeah. Yeah. It honestly, it works. So if you can drink alcohol and, you know, don't get drunk, but just have enough to become less self-conscious, honestly, it helps. It helps me. And I think that's the next step for me with Brazilian Portuguese, is I need to sit with a glass of wine and one of my books and just practice by myself. And hopefully I'll see a difference.
Exactly. I'm sitting there constantly talking out loud to myself. And that's another thing that I think really helped pronunciation-wise, because I was just constantly working it. It's one thing, and I have quick story with regards to my French. I used to speak French pretty fluently, and now I haven't studied it in 1.5, 2 years, and I haven't really spoken it. I can notice when I'm listening, I hear everything fine, but the muscle memory isn't there because I haven't been talking out loud. So if I read something, if I watch something, it's fine, but I can't spontaneously respond. Whereas with Portuguese, it's overtaken my French, which is very weird for me. And so it is one of those things where it is amazing how important it is. Even if you're not in a country that speaks the language, you don't know anyone, just talk out loud as much as possible, right? It's like doing push-ups in your room. Just keep doing it. Exercise, exercise, exercise.
Exactly. And when I was in Spain as well, I just used to walk around the house talking to myself. And I used to say things like, un móvil, un libro, ordenador, las gafas.
Yes, you know, you name things, I would just, right.
Exactly. I would just do that. And as I was doing actions, I was thinking to myself, you know, like, oh, I'm putting the sugar in, and that would help me practice grammar. And I just developed fluency that way. And I started to think in Spanish. And occasionally I do think in Spanish. It's strange because it tends to be when I'm really stressed or I'm really excited about something. Yeah. I don't know. It's like English for me is the serious language. And then as soon as I get like really excited about something or very emotional or angry, I start thinking in Spanish and it's so weird. I don't know why.
I think, the brain in languages is an amazing thing. But we better wrap it up, Emma. Where can people find out more about you? And if they're after British pronunciation, where can they learn this from you?
So, for me. So you can find me on Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. I'm more active on Instagram and, of course, YouTube. I post every single week. You can find me if you just type in pronunciation with Emma.
Of those different social media platforms.
Yep. And my website is also the same. It's not Emma Walker. I don't know who this is.
I must have been smoking something. I think I must have just gotten it wrong because I remember finding you. I think maybe I'm confusing Facebook because your name was that on Facebook. And then I looked on Instagram and was like, okay. But yeah, pronunciation with Emma, guys. And I will put all of the links into the transcript. So thanks so much, Emma.
No problem. Thank you for inviting me. It was good.
My pleasure.
So that was the interview, guys. I hope you enjoyed it. Big thanks to Emma for coming on the Aussie English podcast. Remember, guys, you can find out more about Emma via pronunciationwithemma.com. If you would like pronunciation tutoring for the British accent, you can get lessons with her. You'll also find her on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Just search pronunciation with Emma. The links will all be in the transcript as well if you guys are interested in learning more about Emma. Anyway, guys, I hope you enjoy the episode and I hope you have an amazing week and I will talk to you soon. See ya.